All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is April 14th, 2026. Our top story this morning, once again, it's oil. It's not so much the price move in oil. Oil's only down a couple of bucks today, modestly lower. But it's the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, in particular, the U.S. blockade of the Strait of Hormuz that we're talking about today, because the Iranians are testing it. Several Iranian tankers crossed the strait yesterday, and, well, spoiler alert, they didn't get too far. Not really sure what happened here. There hasn't been any official releasing. There's nothing on the OSINT channels. But two tankers in particular, everybody was watching, two known Shadow Fleet tankers. They crossed the strait. They got into the Gulf of Oman. One of them stopped and the other one turned around. We're going to show you those boats, what's going on with them. It looks like for now the United States is enforcing the blockade, or maybe they just changed their mind. I don't know. But at this point, oil, it's a little bit lower here. Now, even as this is going on, we've got this massive fleet of crude oil tankers are heading for the U.S. right now, a record number. Way up versus what would typically happen in a normal month. So what's going on? The Strait of Hormuz is closed, and everybody in the world is jumping through hoops trying to get oil from somewhere else, and a lot of that business is coming to the United States. And look, there's good and there's bad with that, all right? The good, America, right? We're selling oil. Yeah, the trade balance is, or the trade deficit is shrinking. More exports means GDP growth. That's good for American business. The bad, a lot of that oil is being dumped from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. In other words, we are artificially subsidizing affordable fuel for Asia and Europe. And, well, there's a case to be made that that's a freaking stupid thing to do. So, yeah, there's good and there's bad to be seen with that. The world continues to adjust to the new reality, whatever the heck that is, of the Strait of Hormuz being closed, blocked, and everybody's just trying to get their hands on some energy. And you know, we're seeing all these stories. I don't have any of these in particular, but some countries are cutting their taxes. Other countries are increasing their subsidies. They're jumping through all these hoops to try to subsidize fuel prices to avoid demand destruction. They're trying to keep those prices from rising, even though spot oil markets are trading around $140, $145 a barrel now. They're trying to block those pricing signals from reaching the consumer for obvious reasons, right? You don't want energy costs to get more expensive. That disproportionately hurts poor people. But at the same time, if you block those market signals, then demand never adjusts. And if demand doesn't adjust, you're going to end up with shortages, severe shortages, even more severe than we've already got. So that's going on in the oil markets. Even as knock-on effects are spreading now, we've got a really interesting story, and there's got to be a joke in there somewhere, but I'm a little slow this morning. The knock-on effects of the oil shortage, Japanese bathroom equipment suppliers are closing down. They're not taking orders because they can't get their hands on the feedstock they need, the petroleum-based things like naphtha that are used to make the plastic. And so they're just not taking orders for things like bathtubs, toilets, and showers. And again, I don't know what the whole like not have a pot to piss in thing because there's no oil. I don't know. Some of these jokes write themselves. I'm a little slow this morning. Maybe that one's a little too easy, which is why I don't want to take a swing at it. But they can't make shitters in Japan. That's what's going on this morning. What a 2020s kind of morning this is. All right. Also going on this morning is bank earnings. We got earnings from Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, and Citigroup, along with BlackRock. They were mixed, some good and some bad in there. We're not going to spend too much time in there. The takeaway from big bank earnings so far is that there aren't really any takeaways from big bank earnings. That's the story. There's no story. We also got producer price index. That's inflation upstream of the consumer. PPI came in at 4.0%. That is sharply lower than the 4.6% the market was expecting, but also sharply higher than the 3.4% we got in the prior month. So it's bad, but it's not as bad as it could have been. Core PPI came in at 3.8%. That strips out volatile food and energy. Obviously, energy was particularly volatile last month. 3.8% core, that's versus 4.1% that was expected. Again, lower than expected, but flat versus the prior months. So PPI, I guess we'll call that good news-ish this morning. We've got a crazy story in the airline business. The United Airlines CEO wants to merge with American Airlines. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. United and American combined would be like one third of the domestic airline market in the United States. I'm having a hard time believing the regulators and the antitrust people would just let that sail through. But I read an interesting thing a long time ago. This was a couple of years ago. Somebody was making the point that airline companies, their business model actually resembles banks more than anything else because of the way they operate with airline miles. And rather than rehash that old whole story, I would just point out that during times of turmoil, little banks go under and the big banks gobble them up and get even bigger. And what do we have going on in airlines right now? We have times of turmoil, jet fuel shortages, prices going up, baggage fees going up, and the big airlines are looking to get bigger, just like banks. It's funny how that works. Both stocks are up big on that news. BMW, stop me if you've heard this one. Car sales down on weakness in China and the U.S. China, obviously, competition from domestic EV production, the U.S. tariffs taking a bite out of their sales there, joining the ranks of Mercedes and Volkswagen, who over the last few days have released nearly identical stories. That's three. Now it's a trend. We've also got CarMax. Speaking of cars, CarMax is in the news today. Their stock is taking a dive after the company says that their profits per vehicle will continue to decline, and the company is looking to cut costs. The car market is still a mess, probably because people can't afford cars. That might be a part of your problem there. And last but not least, Festus, Missouri. We got to talk about this little town. Not something we normally cover. We're not very big. We're not very, you know, in touch with the happenings on the ground in Festus, Missouri. But the people in Festus, Mo, they were active yesterday. They voted out half of their city council after the city council approved a very unpopular data center in town. Half of them lost their jobs. There's petitions circulating to get rid of the other half of the city council, and they're trying to get the mayor recalled because they didn't want that data center to get built, and the city council approved it anyway. It's an election year. Data centers are going to be on the ballot. You better believe people are watching that story. Congressmen are watching that story. And also, you know, along those lines, buried within this story is also the subtle, not so subtle story about somebody tried to firebomb Sam Altman's house. And then a few days later, a bunch of people shot at Sam Altman's house. By the way, don't do that. Don't burn people's houses and shoot at them, no matter how much you don't like them. And look, Sam Altman, I do not like Sam Altman at all. I think he's a raging sociopath and an outright liar. And I just don't like the guy. But I don't want to see his house burned down, especially not with him in it, or see him shot at. I'd much rather see him in handcuffs because of fraud and because of shady business dealings than see his house burned down. But look, this case in point here is people really don't like data centers. I mean, are we starting to see this? There's all these stories going around about half of proposed data centers, or more than half of the data centers that are on the docket for this year, are either going to be delayed or outright canceled. Now you've got city councils being recalled, mayors being recalled, and people's houses blowing up because people really hate data centers. I'm telling you guys, this bubble, its days are numbered. But in the meantime, we got a lot we got to talk about. So why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. By the way, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets. And right now, the S&P 500 is modestly positive, up about 14 points or 0.21% to the upside. Stocks somehow eked out a green close yesterday after peace talks with Iran fell apart. The Dow is also up 53 points or 0.11% in the green this morning. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, up almost a half a percent, 124 points to the upside for the NASDAQ. The dollar, meanwhile, is significantly weaker this morning, down about 43 basis points here at 98.00, threatening to go back into the 97s. That should be rocket fuel for gold this morning. We'll take a look at the commodities board in just a second. But first, we must do bonds, and bonds not doing a lot this morning. The 30-year yield, 4.897. That's down by a fraction of a point. The 10-year yield is unchanged at 4.296%. The 2-year yield is at 3.778. That's down by a fraction of a point. And the 1-month is higher by a half a point at 3.668. Looking over at Bitcoin, somebody want to tell me what the heck happened with Bitcoin yesterday? Bitcoin ripped higher by about 4,000 bucks yesterday. Ended up closing around 74,000. Sitting right now, $74,600 is priced at Coinbase. Right on this resistance line that we have now hit several times. We hit it once, we hit it twice, and now we are on it a third time, and resistance and support tends to get weaker the more you hit it. That is three times in a row. So is Bitcoin ready to move higher here, or will we reject this level and resume lower into crypto winter, which still has several months? We're only about halfway through crypto winter here. Either way, man, people were piling into Bitcoin yesterday for what? I don't know. Looking over at the commodities board, we suspected gold would be higher, and it is, although it's modestly higher. $4,777 for spot gold. That's up $37, or about 0.8% higher. June COMEX gold futures are flirting with 4,800 here. We're at 4,799 after hitting 4,819 earlier this morning, up by about $32 or 0.2% higher. Spot silver is getting in on the action as well, $77.72. That's higher by $2.14 or 2.8% higher. May silver futures are at 77.88, higher by 2.22 or 2.95%. I like the shiny. Silver's having a good day, back at 77 today. Copper is higher by 1.5%. Platinum higher by 0.4%. Palladium is a tick lower here, 0.15% in the red. And crude oil now down 3.2%, trading at $95.88 for May WTI futures. But again, guys, we're seeing some steep backwardation. The oil spot market, I'm seeing prices of around $140 thrown around, while the futures market is still trading in the high 90s here. So those two are going to have to come into agreement at some point here. The market's still kind of betting that this conflict won't drag on, even though this conflict has arguably already dragged on longer than it was supposed to. But looking at oil right now, look at the reversal yesterday. When we were talking yesterday at this candle, it was big green here. We were up recovering about 2/3 of the losses from that Monday sell-off last week. Now we are back down here. I mean, oil, sharp reversal yesterday. On what? I don't know. Maybe there's going to be a second round of peace talks. Maybe people are optimistic about that. But we do have the Iranians are pushing the limits of this blockade. What we're looking at right here is the path of the tanker Rich Starry or Starry. I don't know how to pronounce your name here. But Rich here, this is one of those Iranian shadow fleet tankers. And it traversed the strait yesterday after it looked like it was going to traverse the strait. And then you'll see here it kind of like turned around, had second thoughts. Now I'm not sure what I want to do with my life. And then they said, YOLO, let's go for it. They went through the strait into the Gulf of Oman, and then they abruptly turned around and reversed course. So I don't know. Did the U.S. Navy change their mind? Did somebody forget their keys? I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. But the Rich Starry was the first to try to run the blockade, and it didn't make it. Now let's refresh here, because besides the Rich Starry, there is another vessel that is important. Let me find it here. It is the Elpis. Everybody was watching the Elpis yesterday because Elpis had left the building, so to speak. Here it is. This tanker. The oil tanker Elpis on marine traffic. This one also left the strait yesterday. Let's show its past track. Now, the interesting thing about the Elpis is it actually came from an Iranian port. They had their transponder switched off. They turned it back on right as they traversed the strait. And they got to here about 7 p.m. last night, and then they stopped. And they've been doing like half a knot ever since, which means they're adrift. The two tankers are very close. The Rich Starry changed direction right about the same point where the Elpis stopped, which is right about the line that President Trump drew, said where the blockade is going to be. So it looks like the Iranian captains didn't make it, had other thoughts, or I don't know. We haven't heard from the Navy about what they did, if anything, to these boats, but they didn't make it. That's the point here. A few tankers challenged the blockade, and so far none have gotten through. And I would also point out that the blockade is only supposed to apply to tankers leaving Iranian ports. The Rich Starry says on its vessel tracking data that it's coming from a UAE port, although the Rich Starry is a known Iranian shadow fleet tanker that's subject to U.S. sanctions. They can fake their data. Sometimes they do that. There's also all kinds of electronic warfare going on in this part of the world here. They're blocking GPS and everything. So take some of this data with a grain of salt. But for now, it looks like no Iranian boats are getting through the blockade. And even as that is happening, we've got this one in the center, square.com. Record armada of tankers bound for U.S. Gulf to load oil. This is from 2 days ago. An unusually large number of crude oil tankers on the open seas has the American Gulf Coast as a destination as the ships are redirected to load cargoes bound for markets around the world already experiencing shortages. Shipping data posted by maritime intelligence company Windward shows 171 crude tankers are bound for the U.S. Gulf Coast to load crude oil cargoes, which compares with about 110 in a typical month. Now, that's not an apples-to-apples comparison. They're talking about total that would come to the U.S. in a month versus 171 currently bound. So obviously a big increase in the number, also a slight change in what we're measuring here. But either way, guys, a lot more tankers are coming to the U.S. to load up on oil. Those are tankers that would normally have gone to the Middle East. The surging vessel traffic comes as nations throughout Europe and Asia grapple to secure energy supplies and regional prices skyrocket. Germany is providing emergency fuel relief to its citizens, while officials in the Philippines recently declared a national energy emergency as the world looks increasingly to the U.S. to replenish war-starved oil and gas markets. Again, guys, there's good and there's bad here. Yep, that's good for U.S. business. That's more U.S. exports. That's more money coming into the country. But where are we getting that money? By selling oil, a lot of which is coming out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So we are weakening the long-term defensive posture of the country as we do that. So there's good and there's bad here. And the knock-on effects of this energy situation, I think we can call it an energy crisis now. I think that's safe to say. Japanese bathtub makers halt orders as material shortages bite. Major Japanese home equipment supplier Cleanup Corp has suspended orders for its popular bathroom units, the latest in a string of companies suffering material shortages as the Iran conflict stretches on. Tokyo-based Cleanup will stop taking orders on Wednesday, the company announced in a statement on its website. Due to escalating tensions in the Middle East, it has become increasingly difficult to procure raw materials, the company said. It didn't give an expected resumption date. Shares fell 0.8%. Toklas, a Japanese kitchen and bathroom systems maker under electronics giant Yamada, also warned Tuesday that the squeeze on naphtha and other raw materials might prompt shortages or price revisions. Toilet maker Toto halted bathroom unit orders a day earlier, while the Nikkei reported that Lixil Corp and Panasonic Housing Solutions, also major suppliers, have stopped giving delivery dates for their own products. Japan gets more than 90% of its crude oil from the Middle East and depends on the area for almost 45% of its naphtha, a feedstock crucial for plastic production, according to government data. So again, guys, oil touches everything, all right? It's not just gasoline. It's not just paint at the pump. All the plastic is made from oil, petrochemicals, fertilizers. So now we're starting to see the knock-on effects. You know, gas prices go up the next day, even though they take a month to go back down when this conflict resolves. But now we're starting to see second-order effects here, bathtub makers. That means, you know, the existing stuff that's on the market, the prices of that is probably going to go up. So this is how eventually you get secondhand inflation. So that's another reason why I don't think those CPI numbers are going to stay low for very long. All right, and we got bank earnings. We're going to go pretty fast through this because there wasn't really a lot to take away from these. Wells Fargo misses loan and fee estimates amid lower interest rates. Wells Fargo also gave us some data on their private credit exposure. I think it was down here a little bit. Where was it? Let me find the number. Wells Fargo disclosed that they have a total of $210 billion of loans to non-bank financial firms. Roughly $36.2 billion of that is private credit. But for now, Wells Fargo, people are merely really looking at missing on the loan and fee estimates. That stock down about 3.3% this morning, trading at $83.75. JP Morgan earnings came in. They topped estimates on fixed income and investment banking as Wall Street hums. The investment banking, you're seeing a lot more mergers and acquisitions recently. JP Morgan is cashing in on that. Fixed income, bond traders. JP Morgan also reduced their provisions for loan losses a little bit. That was a little bit surprising. But JP Morgan stock not really moving here. $313. That's lower by about 20 cents. Again, the news from bank earnings was really that there isn't any news. And we got Citigroup, another big bank. They posted a big jump in profit, 42%, as market volatility lifts trading revenue. Markets were very volatile in the first quarter. Stocks were generally down in correction territory, but we had some big upswings. And then, of course, the outbreak of war, the market was all over the place. As one day Trump said something belligerent, and then the next day he did a taco, market would be up and down with that. So Citigroup cashed in on a lot of trading revenue. That stock is up 1.3%, trading at $127.88. Citigroup is really the only bank that has reacted favorably to earnings. Like yesterday, Goldman Sachs reported earnings that were really good, but the market was expecting better, so that one closed negative. Wells Fargo and JP Morgan were kind of mad. Those stocks are down. Citigroup is the only one that is up. Not a lot to take away from the bank earnings, though. Producer price index came out. We got inflation measured further upstream. And this one was kind of surprising, dare I say suspiciously so. U.S. producer prices increased by 4.0% year over year in March of 2026. The market was expecting 4.6%. That is a big miss to the downside, or a big beat, I guess, is how you would describe that. Suspiciously so. That's way lower than the market was expecting. But it's also worth pointing out that's also way higher than we got in February. Now, that was a 3.4% increase in February. Again, falling well short of market expectations. Energy, obviously, a big contributor to that. As producer prices increase, that puts pressure on consumer prices. So obviously, CPI probably going to continue heading higher. And when you look at core producer price index, which strips out food and energy, it came in at 3.8%, unchanged from the prior months. Market was expecting 4.1%. So again, below expectations, significantly so. Meanwhile, United Airlines CEO has pitched a possible tie-up with rival American Airlines. United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby has floated a possible combination with American Airlines, according to people familiar with the conversations, an audacious proposal or audacious proposition that would face intense scrutiny even under the business-friendly Trump administration. Kirby has pitched the idea to senior government officials, though it's unclear if any overtures have since been made or if an actual process is underway to explore a deal. That's according to people who asked not to be identified because the conversations were private. At the same time, deliberations show how recent market upheaval has brought the possibility of consolidation to the fore. Kirby told employees in a memo last month that the carrier would benefit from any shakeout in the industry as part of rising oil and fuel prices, potentially providing purchase opportunities. We'll be there to pick up some of those assets. Might be a win-win for them, Kirby said on Bloomberg TV on March 24th. Asked if that would mean buying entire companies, he said, we'll see. There's lots of rumors about that. So again, just like banks, during times of turmoil, the big guys get bigger. American Airlines stock ripping on that news. This news came after hours yesterday around 6:30 p.m. You can see a big jump in American Airlines stock. It's continuing to rise this morning, trading at $12.16, up 8.28%. And even United is up a little bit here, up 1.86% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $96.97. So both stocks are up on that news. Meanwhile, we've got a very familiar story here. BMW first quarter car sales drop on weakness in China and the U.S. This is now the third European automaker to report this exact story in the last 2 weeks. BMW's first quarter car sales declined after more struggles in China, where luxury spending is down and German manufacturers are ceding share to local brands. Global deliveries fell 3.5% amid a 10% drop in China and a decline in the U.S., BMW said on Tuesday. On a positive side, the luxury car maker cited growth in Europe and more than 50,000 orders for its new electric iX3 sport utility vehicle. BMW is facing similar challenges to its European peers, which are grappling with stiff competition from Chinese rivals, tariffs in the U.S., and uncertainty sparked by the war in the Middle East. Last week, both Porsche and Mercedes-Benz reported falling sales in the first quarter, as did Volkswagen. European automakers getting clobbered here by Chinese EVs and U.S. tariffs. Meanwhile, CarMax, another auto story today, drops as profit per vehicle seen lower and deeper cost cuts. CarMax shares fell after the company said profit per vehicle sold to retail customers will continue to decline and expanded its cost-cutting target. Shares slumped as much as 12% in pre-market trading in New York. The stock was up 27% this year through Monday's close, though the stock remains down more than 60% over the past 5 years. The retailer expects retail gross profit per unit in fiscal 2027 to drop at a pace similar to the fourth quarter's 8.9% decline, the steepest slide in the past three quarters. CarMax raised its goal for cutting sales, general and administrative, Let's start that over. CarMax raised its goal for cutting sales, general, and administrative expenses to $200 million by the end of 2027, up from $150 million previously. It also plans to scale back capital spending to about $400 million. Well, if you're worried about your sales declining, cutting back your sales and administrative expenses and cutting back your CapEx sure isn't going to fix the problem. CarMax is in trouble here, guys. The stock, it's doing better than its lowest point in the morning. It was down 12% at one point, currently down 6.3%, trading at $45.97. I got one eye on Carvana here. Things always seem to be going suspiciously well at Carvana while everybody else in the auto space is having trouble. Are they that good or are they just lying? I can't. You tell me. You tell me. CarMax down big this morning. And last but not least, we got this one in TomsHardware.com. This story is pretty crazy. Small Missouri town ousts half of its city council after a $6 billion AI data center approval. Petition calls for the mayor's removal as frustration and violence over AI data centers mounts. A lawsuit is also seeking to undo the project's approval. Yikes. People really hate data centers. The small town of Festus, Missouri, a community made up of just under 14,000 people, has become a focal point over the growing backlash against AI data centers entering communities across the country. Following the approval of a $6 billion data center project, voters removed four of the eight members of the Festus City Council, as well as started a petition to remove the remaining city council members and the mayor, reports Politico. The approved project is set to occupy 360 acres of land with an unidentified developer. Residents filed a lawsuit against the city on Thursday, alleging that Festus didn't give the public enough time to review the proposal ahead of the decision, and that made it illegal. And that it made illegal rezoning decisions for the proposal. It also claims the city participated in private meetings concerning the project that should have been public. The situation in Festus is a recent example, but several other instances of voter opposition to AI data centers have appeared in just the past few months. In February, the New Brunswick, New Jersey City Council struck down an AI data center deal instead of using the 27,000 square feet of real estate to build a public park. In September of 2025, Prince George County in Maryland paused data center projects after community opposition and formed a task force to study the risks of AI data centers. And in St. Charles, Missouri, less than an hour's drive from Festus, there's a push to ban data centers in the area permanently. Although there's been a growing tide of opposition through official channels like city council elections, more extreme instances of opposition are starting to appear. Just days ago, a 20-year-old man attempted to firebomb OpenAI CEO Sam Altman's house in San Francisco. On Sunday, two additional people allegedly shot at Altman's home, leading to two arrests. Opposition is one challenge AI data centers face, but according to recent reports, around half of all AI data center projects have been delayed or canceled for a variety of reasons. Chief among them is electrical infrastructure, with lead times for high power transformers ballooning from around 2 years to up to 5 years. Guys, read that again. Around half of all AI data center projects have been delayed or canceled for a variety of reasons. Guys, this bubble, I don't know what's taking so long. I'm amazed it's lasted this long, but half of the projects canceled, entire city councils losing their job over approving these things. People's houses being shot at and firebombed. By the way, don't do that. Days are numbered here on this bubble. And I just want to say thank you all very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Also, thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below as well, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.